I've always said, in any environment, be it work, be it a relationship, be it wherever you are, be it a golf club, for me, the most dangerous people are the very, very insecure. And one thing I try to do in my life, in my relationships, in my friendships, is not be around those people who are massively insecure. Because in the end, I call it like spraying. They spray and they spray on you. And before you know it, you're starting to have doubts in yourself, in your own mind.
Welcome to Golf Yourself Healthy, the community of golfers who are unified in their belief that golf is good for you. Now, if you're thinking of skipping this intro, don't, because I have some exciting news for you. The GYH community page is now live over on golfyourselfhealthy.com. If you want to truly feel part of a community, part of a movement which will help you be the happiest and healthiest version of yourself both on and off the golf course, then you need to get yourself signed up. Because we're growing and the future's bright here at Golf Yourself Healthy, you won't want to miss out on what a free subscription to the GYH community will do for you. Use the link in the show notes where you will find the quick and easy link to sign up and receive all the perks that go with being a GYH community member for free. So to introduce this week's guest, Janelle Aldred. Janelle is an experienced and respected broadcast journalist and communications consultant. Having worked at some of the UK's largest broadcasting organisations over the years, including Sky News, the BBC and ITN. Most pertinently for this podcast though, she's a keen golfer and a member of Essendon Country Club in Hertfordshire, where Janelle and I had the pleasure of playing nine holes of golf just before we went into the clubhouse and recorded this conversation. Janelle's love for the game of golf is apparent throughout our conversation, and we talk about how she has been able to combine her enjoyment of playing golf with writing about her golfing experiences and having her work published in some major media outlets. Indeed, it's through her written contributions to the PGA's Golf Business Quarterly magazine, a publication we ourselves at GYH have been featured in recently. I've included a link to that in the show notes also, as well as a feature that Janelle wrote for the Observer newspaper back in January 2023. It is through that work that Janelle does that I became aware of her, and she is someone I've had on my radar, on the GYH radar, for quite some time now to invite her on as a guest. So very grateful to her for answering the call. One of the qualities in Janelle's writing which stood out to me instantly was how she is not afraid to challenge conventional or traditional ways of thinking in golf and to stand for diversity and inclusion in the game and to be able to articulate these views in a way which is both authentic and direct, yet balanced and measured at the same time. I think we could all learn a lot from that. This conversation doesn't disappoint in that regard. Janelle holds true to those qualities and values that I've just mentioned in what is a wide-ranging conversation in which we chat about all things golf, life, and lots of things in between. Really, one of the most thought-provoking takeaways I have from the conversation is the notion of belonging. We all have a right to feel a sense of belonging, not just in golf, but in any given life circumstance. And listening to Janelle's views on the subject have really left me holding the mirror up to myself, questioning who I am, what I value, what I'm good at, to believe in myself more, and crucially, to be selflessly ruthless in who I surround myself with, in the interests of feeling that elusive sense of belonging in golf and in the world at large. So, without any further ado, let's tee off and jump into the conversation.
So Janelle, thank you very much for today, first and foremost. Thanks for having me here. It's great to meet you in person, and welcome to the Golf Yourself Healthy podcast.
Thank you. I'm glad you came to the lovely Essendon. I love it here, so, and I think the course was in lovely condition today, so I'm glad you came and played.
I wholly concur with that. And as I've said many times in this podcast, one of the things I enjoy about it most, and which is, I suspect, given what I've just told you about the fact that I'm going back to full-time employment in August, going to be less of my time to be able to come to my guest and actually play golf with them and then have the conversation afterwards, because I mean, like, there's so much to love about that. Like, I get to play a new course, I get to meet a new person, have a good chat, and then when you come in afterwards, you've got plenty to talk about, not least because of the meat and the sandwich in the podcast conversation, but the actual round of golf that's passed as well. So
and you drained a couple of great putts.
I did, right?
They were meaty putts, very, very well. My game was terrible today.
Do you know what, Janelle? Like the only other time on this podcast where I've we captured some audio of like talking about my game and how good it's been on the day, I just took it out because again I thought, you sound like a really cocky so-and-so talking about.
Oh no, but you've got to leave that
leave
in.
This one in.
Leave it in.
Leave it
was
in.
Great. They were great putts. They were great. And you got a par from like some crazy. You were on the tee box, not of our hole, of another hole at one point, and then you got a par still, didn't you?
That's right. Yeah.
So that's a great one.
Yeah, that was from downtown, and I was really nonchalant about it, only because I was just as surprised as I was probably more
hole,
surprised
you drained
than you
another
were.
Long. Putt for another par.
But you see, it was one of those days as well where I think the golfing gods decided today that Chris, today is going to be your day. Probably won't be now for the next few months.
Well, I'm looking forward to the day when they decide it's my day again, because I think I'm overdue a day.
Well, I like to check in with my guests at the start of every conversation. So how are you feeling now, especially, you know, sort of think about how you were feeling when you started before you walked on the first tee and now you've walked off the ninth tee.
I think I've gotten much better at leaving my golf game on the last green. Say before I would go away, I would think about it. Sometimes I would go home and think about all the shots I missed and really, but actually I think I've become much better at, do you know what, I didn't play great today. And actually I'm sitting here not thinking about that. I've kind of left it out there. Maybe have a good game one day soon, I will bring it along with me. But yeah, I've gotten a lot better at just leaving what's happened on the golf course, because it was not a great round.
Yeah. Well, I think you're very hard on yourself.
If
I'm honest.
Okay.
And if you permit me to say that, because I've only just met you, but I think, you know, and I'm looking forward to chatting about this in this conversation about your journey in golf. But I think, I think you did just fine, Janelle. And so I think,
oh, really?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Well, you're not the first person to say that I'm hard on myself on the golf course, definitely. I think it's because this time last year, my game was in a much better place. My swing was in a better place. So I was enjoying it more. And I think at the moment, it's really interesting, isn't it? And I think this is a lot like life. In my golf game at the moment, all I see is the gap between where I was this time last year and where I am now. And so for me, that feels quite hard, but I'm better this year at not being like, oh, I mean, every now and again, I'll be like, Janelle, what are you doing? And, you know, but I'm not as, I used to feel really upset. I used to cry. I used to, you know, it used to really bother me, whereas I'm just not there in my head anymore, which is good. But yes, I'm quite exacting on myself on, because I'm seeing that gap.
Well, it was just, I say this because I, you know, some of the self-talk, like the number of times I heard, oh, Janelle, you know, it's like, but I think, you know, you've got an absolutely mean short game, I have to say. If I could chip like you, then I would have, that for me is the part of the game that trips me up. It's quite funny actually, because when we were emailing to set this up, you said to me in an email, oh, right, we'll meet you this time. There's a nice chipping area. You can go there beforehand. I'm thinking, she hasn't seen my short game to me. What did I say to you? Like, practice beforehand.
You just don't.
Because that'll only just reinforce how bad certain things, like, so it's just as we were coming off the ninth green coming in here now, we were talking about that thing about that your golf coach instructor has been saying to you, don't try and fix things when you're out on the course.
Yeah, work with what you got.
And again, equally, I think today was actually one of the rare occasions for me where I've arrived at my golf venue well ahead of time. So, you know, one thing I'll tell you about me is my belly tends to dictate my life. So like, I need to have eaten well.
Okay.
So like, I'm more about, you know, a lot of golfers are kind of like, oh, you know, what short game facilities have they got? What's the pro shop like? I'm like, Have they got, what's the breakfast menu?
Yeah, the food here is good. I will say, the food here is very, one of the reasons why I moved here, customer service and the food. So yeah, I will concur that you probably were well fed before you arrived.
Well, do you know what? I think if we spend just a brief minute talking about that, because again, like it, as I've been telling you, and as you, I think you know now, Golf Yourself Healthy as a brand, if you like, as a movement, maybe, if I want to call it that, is trying to talk about diversity inclusion, for example, in a very broad sense in the game. And for me personally, I wrap up the customer experience in that as well, because I think it's such an understated part of the whole experience. And so, for instance, I will, you know, it's such a warm reception. So I arrived here, you know, while before you did, I came in. Vera and the other lady is just
Debbie.
Showed us Debbie. Like, just the, you know, that was, for me, that was like really good stuff straight out of the what yep. good customer service play.
You walk into
looks
the pro
like,
shop
so.
And there's, hello, you finish playing, that's often a how's your round. You go to the bar, people are waiting, you know, getting the drinks, like, oh no, we'll bring them in for you. There's, when I first came here, I didn't have a car at the time. But after my first visit here, I said to my friends, if I had a car, I'd join this club. And it was purely and mainly around the welcome. I think when people have played golf for a really long time, or they're really good golfers, sometimes for them it's more about the course. And that's what they're focused on. They're focused on the course, they're focused on the condition of the course, and the bar's like a place for a drink. So they're not so fussed about whether that's good or not. But I think if golf wants to be more open and inclusive and have lots of new golfers leaving ranges and coming to golf courses, some of that is going to be about the welcome in mm-hmm. the golf club,
yep.
the facilities, the food, and seeing golf more as a whole day out experience rather than just the course. If you're not a great golfer, it's never going to be about the course for you. It's just not. It's important because obviously it needs to be in good nick and different things. But I can't, you know, now I can see more whether a golf course in good nick or not. When I first started playing, I didn't know. You know, you don't know if a bunker's got a lot of sand in it. You're just trying to get out. So it's for me, the thing that I did love about here and have loved about here is, one, the drive-in. So the drive-in from the gateway.
Are you reading off my checklist here?
Driving in from the gateway, you know, it's like a mile of tree-lined road, like windy.
I like to think of it like Magnolia Lane at the Masters. Yeah. Oh, like, you know, when you drive, I imagine when I drove in here, I was like, have I got the theme tune to the Masters?
Because it's beautiful.
It is.
And
it is.
You kind of leave the world behind, yeah. I think, when you drive in here. And living in London like I do, a lot of the golf courses, though the courses are lovely, they are, you're in a city and you literally, you're in the car park and the first tee is there. Or as my old club, you know, you have to go into the underpass and get to the first tee. So it kind of, you kind of don't get the chance to almost leave life at the gates. And that's something that I love about here. You drive in, the view's beautiful, it's green, you know, you go past the golf course, you see people golfing, you know, you get to the car park, you know, you can leave your clubs by the door of the pro shop, you go into the pro shop, there's all the hellos, you know, never have I found anyone to be unhelpful or unkind. And that has actually made a big difference to kind of what I was looking for, because in other places, some of it's been good, some of it's been patchy. Mm. And that's the thing that I walked in the door here and was like, yes, this feels like home. I mean, I find it really interesting and I'd love to hear your thoughts, but it's not a member-owned club. This is a business. And I do think some people love member-owned clubs because they feel like family to them. For me, that is my idea of not fun. Because actually that's not what I'm looking for from a club. And so I do think there are definitely people who like member-owned clubs, and I think that is very traditional. But I think clubs like this also have their place. So when I was coming here, a lot of people, oh, it's a country club, and oh, you know. But for me, that's why I like it. Because in the rest of my life, I'm used to a certain level of customer service, and I enjoy that. So why wouldn't I want that as part of my golfing experience? And so I think for younger professional people who are taking up the game, this is more what they're expecting as a experience.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd, you know, thanks for the opportunity to offer my perspective on this, because I'd love to, because my theory is that this is the future of golf clubs.
Yeah.
I personally believe, and I'm saying this from a, you know, a point of having had experience, for example, being in governance in a members-owned golf club, and seeing how fundamentally, I think the differentiation between proprietor, but you know, owned golf clubs versus members run golf clubs is the former affords the flexibility to the owner just to do do what they want. You know what I mean?
To run it.
You don't have to worry about the red tape and the politics and much lesser degree. And I, you know, there's a place in Wales, for example, called Park Golf Club, where I interviewed a guest recently. She's an instructor there, and they're a prime example of that because they are doing things in, for example, in the name of diversity and inclusion, like running midnight, like Ramadan golf sessions for Muslim golfers and helping them break their fast. And which to get that done in a member, like you would have to,
it would be, you would need a concentration of members to even get it on the table.
Yeah.
And then to get that passed. And I don't even want to lay this blame at the old boys' door, because I think that's actually not always what I found to be the case. But it's just whoever feels that we shouldn't be doing this. And I think we spoke about it on the course. It's still a lot of life is about who's allowed to have that. So which group of people are allowed to bring in something completely new and different in a members club where there's been people who've been there for 40 years, 30 years, you know, sometimes longer. And I don't want to knock that, because that's also important too, that longevity, that history, that knowledge, the shared community that's been going on for decades and decades is also important. Mm. But I think it's about how do you balance that with innovating and thinking about, well, who's not here and how will we survive in 10 to 15 years if we don't open up? Because for me, when I see a lot of people, well, that's how it is. In 30 years' time, you may not be here or you may not be playing golf. Would you like for this club to die because what you haven't done enough of is bring through a funnel of people who are going to be members in 20 to 30 years and enable that to happen? And I think there's a lack of sometimes long-sightedness. The world is changing so rapidly and is changing quicker and quicker all the time.
Yeah.
And we need to embrace that.
You know, given the work you do, Janelle, you know, part of the many skills and experiences you have, you're a communications consultant. And, you know, I've read some of the articles you've contributed to Golf Monthly, for instance, where you talk about some of what you've just said there. And I kind of wanted to ask you that, how, given your professional and life experience of almost like human behavior, for instance, and how confident or optimistic are you that these sort of types of very systemic behaviors in golf can change? Because I'll be honest with you, from my experience of being on that board at that golf club last year, it's really left me feeling quite deflated.
I think some golf clubs are going to close. Like, that's my honest opinion. Maybe not in 5 years, or, you know, maybe not in 10 years, but in 15, 20, because they won't be able to sustain unless they change. And I think, you know, one of the things I've always prided myself on is having a bit of vision. I left Regional News in 2016 because it was really clear to me that this was not going to be going on because of digital and the way they were not adapting to it.
Mm-hmm.
And because you sometimes, I always say, you have to be a genius to kind of look down the road and see what's coming. And when you look at the numbers of people playing at ranges and not transferring onto golf courses, staying at the range, staying at pitch and putt, and it's not that I think you want to do away with all the traditions. There's a reason why they're there. Some of them are important, but some of them aren't. And some of them are not making a difference to people's golfing experience. And so actually, I'm hopeful that some clubs will change, because I think some clubs will, but a lot of it's down to the members and how progressive or not they are. But like you say, clubs like this and other group chains that are forming will probably start buying out clubs, and then maybe the future will end up being like gyms. You know, you just have a brand that's across the country. Is that a good thing? I don't actually know if that's a good thing or not. But what I will say is, unless they will come in and help some of these smaller troubled clubs, who in the end, their membership, if it's too top heavy age-wise, then what happens in 10, 15 years? Because you need to have the critical mass of full fee paying members.
Yeah, of course.
Which is 40, you know, to 60. Mm. Are you full fee paying members?
Mm.
What does that group and demographic of people want? And that's the question that I don't think enough clubs are asking.
Well, let's keep a watching brief on it. let's maybe do this podcast again a year or two down the line.
In 10 years' time and see what's going on.
Right, yeah. So let's, for the benefit of my listeners, get to know Janelle a bit better. So who is Janelle Aldred, first and foremost?
I think that's the lifelong question that I'm still trying to answer myself. I think me...
What's the current version of that?
Current
answer?
Version of me is... family member, I'd probably say first. Family and friend. It's probably what I am first, because I think that is... It's so easy to lead with what you do. But I'm a firm believer that, you know, I'm not what I do. Like, I go to work to live. I don't live for work. So that's me first and foremost. I'm a passionate advocate of justice, social justice. I'm a passionate advocate of better conversations and better communication. And I'm a journalist and by trade, and I'm an author. And so, yeah, that's a bit of what I do, you know, communications consultant. But that's all of those things kind of wrapped up into, it's almost like my job is the output of what I am and what I've done.
Mm.
And so a lot of my work kind of flows from that, from being a young child, raised in a Christian household, dad's a minister, great communicator, to ending up being on the TV, ending up reading the news. Well, say ended up, did my master's degree in broadcast journalism, so not a surprise, but running a TV channel, you know, I've done several different things. So yeah, this version of me, oh, what would I say? I would probably say hopefully it's the most mature I've been. But also I think it's just, I think I'm probably in a bit more of a, what I want to spend the rest of the next 20 years of working doing. Like, how do I want to make my money? What is it I want to do? What is it I'd like to leave behind? You can't determine what your legacy will be. No one can. But you can think about what it is that you want to put out into the world and how you want to do that. So that's probably what this version of me is currently thinking about and ruminating on and spending a bit of time thinking about what I say yes to, what I say no to. And all of those things.
So it'd be great if, you know, we can revisit this in a moment, just in terms of how that then plays out in a golf context, for example, you know, in some of the, that, whether you would even call it work, like, you know, that you do in terms of, you know, some of the, yeah, in golf, but I'll come back to that. But how did you get into golf and why golf?
So about 10 years ago now, my mentor at the time was like, you should take up golf. So I was reading the news at the time, early mornings. It wasn't quite the right time. So it was Cyril Reeveson's wife, Julia. She still golfs and she does incredible work, like bringing women into golf, and especially women of colour. And it was because at work, I have always, you know, when you've got an on-screen job, they're the coveted jobs in a workplace. And I always kind of struggled with the politics of corporate life. It just doesn't suit. I'm just quite straightforward. I'm very direct. So all of that kind of convoluted stuff is just not me. And, you know, I was finding it tough. And so, but he was saying it's great for your career, great for networking. So I tried it, did a gateway to golf that was awful. And I just didn't have the time or the headspace. I was getting up 3 o'clock in the morning to go to work. It just wasn't going to work. So fast forward to after lockdown, I've moved. I don't know anymore where I live. And he's passed away, and I was talking to his wife, and she was saying, you know, Julia was saying, you know, why don't you try golf? You know, there's loads of golf courses around where I live. And so I just Googled it. There was a gateway to golf, and I just did it. And then, you know, sometimes right time. So I was working for myself at the time, so I had more time to play in the day, or I made a lot of time to play in the day. And it just came at a time when I needed it, when I, post-lockdown, heads full of just everything. I was living by myself in lockdown. It was just a really weird, horrible time. It's so crazy to think about COVID now, because it just feels like a different dimension. So taking up golf got me outside, got me with people again. So yeah, I think it came back into my life at a time when I had time and space. That was about 2 years ago. And then, yeah, just kept it up through the highs and many lows. But, yeah, still playing.
I may sound surreal, but I sort of missed the COVID golf times in a way. Like the, you know, I'm a big one on nostalgia. And a bit later on, I'll ask you to, I've got this segment in this podcast, which is called Golf Yourself Nostalgic. Recall a time that makes you feel warm and fuzzy. It's a nice memory of you and your golf. But, you know, I wrote a journal for GYH and put it on the website, which is from a time during COVID when, like, you know, I was staying with my mum, who'd been quite unwell at the time. We went out and on the golf course together, yeah. You know, and it was like surreal because it, you know, like the, you know, all the ball washers were covered over with, there's things you could, you know, it was just like, I don't know, but equally, like from what you're saying, it's COVID did wonderful things for, or golf did wonderful things for people during COVID, actually.
COVID did a lot for golf. I think a lot of people took up golf because it was one of the things you could do. You could be outside and you could play.
Yeah.
But I was took it up when 2021, 2022. So we were out of it, really.
Yeah.
We were out of it by the time I took it up.
So, you know, you've played golf for a while now. You've been in and around golf for a while now. And with that, and going back to what we were talking about earlier, you've seen and experienced firsthand all the good stuff about golf, but maybe some of the not so great stuff about golf as well. So I almost wonder, you know, given the reputation that historically golf has had, whether it's stuffy, it's elitist, whatever. Did you have a notion of that when you, or did that even cross your radar? And did you have to almost get over that, if you will, or no?
No, I mean, it's really funny because I was watching some old 1990s like R&B and hip hop videos. And it was actually really funny. The thing they were doing to show they had money, because that's the time it's all about showing how much money you had, is they were playing golf. And it's so interesting that I'd never really thought about that in the intervening time. When I saw it, I was like, oh, that's so funny, because that was the view. It was a thing that was moneyed. Maybe I don't see the world in that way. I say it and I kind of mean it in a really, I don't know, however it comes across. But I feel like I belong everywhere. So I've never thought like I don't belong there or I shouldn't be there. I've never thought that. I think because of the way I was introduced to it by my mentor and his wife, and so they would take me along to their golf clubs, the dinners, and just different things that were going on there socially. So I didn't ever feel like, oh, these people are stuffy or rude or... No, I don't think that ever... I think as you get deeper into golf, I think you do see more things that you're like, okay, well, that's not nice. But I think I didn't necessarily have a set view about the kind of people who play golf. And probably that's because my uncle plays golf, my cousin plays golf, those friends have played golf. These are all black people. Like, you know, so I guess in that sense, I don't know, that wasn't really, I try to think I'm not that much of a judgmental person. So I don't think I was judging golf, if that makes sense.
No, well, that's good. We spoke on the golf course and you've alluded to it again now about that line you said there, I feel like I belong everywhere.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's going to be people listening to this going, what's her secret sauce? So can you repeat to the listener what you said to me out in the golf course around how can you turn up so confident in your life?
I just think, one, I was raised really confident by my parents, and we used to grow up having family meetings where you were basically encouraged to share your opinion. So I grew up with my opinion being heard, listened to, you know, all of those things. And then over time, I've just done things I'm very good at. So you become very confident because I know that I can show up to work and do a great job. I know that I can, you know, most things that I think that I've done over the past 20 years in my career, I've been very, very good at. And I don't know, I was just really, I bring it to my parents really, just really raised to not see yourself like not belonging, if that, I don't even know how better to describe that. Just, we just felt like our opinions counted. We had things of importance to say and that someone should listen. So I think we were just kind of raised with our heads held quite high. We've got three girls in our family.
Yeah. You know, because we also spoke about building on and continuing what we're talking about here, because again, I've read an article where you talk about this. You say it, like, I feel like I belong everywhere and I'm not one to experience imposter syndrome. No. I'm sure I've read monthly article.
Yeah.
Now, I do. I definitely do. And I was telling you on the golf course about how our mutual friend Mike Harris said something really complimentary to me recently. And I almost thought, like, okay, Mike, I can sort of, I can recognize that in myself, but I daren't, like, use that as a strength. Like, I almost don't want, and you said, that's a very British thing.
I think so.
I agree, but I was relieved that you almost said that, because I'll say that and kind of catch yourself going, oh, am I just generalizing?
Americans, if you look at Americans, they're so confident.
Yeah.
They're very much like, yeah, that's me. Like, I do this or I do that. That's in my wheelhouse. I think the reason why people also don't do it is because we know it's not the way it's done here. And there is absolutely, I think, a penalty in life for showing up very confidently. I think everybody knows that because everyone thinks, well, people are going to think that I think, or people are going to think that I am. And for a lot of people, at the root of us, we want to be liked. So I think that becomes a very uncomfortable place to acknowledge the things we have in our lives that are giving us an advantage, however you want to look at that. It's like I said to you, you know, we talk about privilege in very binary ways, but the truth is there's privilege to being good looking. There's privilege to being thin. Like, and we kind of know it because it floats around in the ether, but most people don't want to nail on that for themselves. I know I'm a very good public speaker, great communicator, good writer, and all of those things give me an advantage in my life. Of course they do, because I know that if I'm in a sticky situation, I can probably talk my way out of it, or I know what to say, or I know what not to say, or I know where not to go. I know what to give people or what to, like, keep back. So I think a lot of my confidence comes from that, because but also I just don't feel superior or inferior to anybody. And I think for me, that's where my confidence also comes from. I'm not better than anyone, but I'm not less than anyone else either. And so for me, when I can rest in that place, I know I can be in an office and talk to anyone from CEO to more junior to a senior leader to a middle management to a cleaner. I don't mind. They're all going to get the same Janelle. And I think it just makes my life easier. I'm not trying to be something I'm not. The first place I did feel like an imposter on the golf course, but it was nothing to do with the people. It was through the numbers that I'm scoring. So that is nothing to do with anybody else. That is, like, me objectively, what I want to be doing and what I am doing. And that gap, that's what I don't like. Or that's why I'm like, oh, Janelle, you know.
You talk about, like, the penalty in life. I love that concept. And I guess, again, some of the conversations we've been having out in the golf course today make me then, a takeaway I have from that is finding the environments which don't penalise you for that, actually, and almost celebrate and encourage that.
Yep.
And that's the quest for all of us. And we'll have to find the wrong environments a few times, I'm sure, before we find the right one.
I've always said, in any environment, be it work, be it a relationship, be it wherever you are, be it a golf club, for me, the most dangerous people are the very, very insecure. They're the most dangerous people, because if you feel small, you will always try to drag people down to size. And everyone has insecurities. There's no one who doesn't have an insecurity. We all have them. But it depends on the scale to which they dominate your behavior and the things that you do and the ways that you interact with the people. And one thing I try to do in my life, in my relationships, in my friendships, is not be around those people who are massively insecure. Because in the end, I call it like spraying. They spray, and they spray on you. And before you know it, you're starting to have doubts in yourself, in your own mind, about things that you were quite clear on before. And now you're not clear. What's changed? What's changed is that the power of suggestion is always a very strong thing. By someone repeatedly suggesting to you that maybe that's not a reason to be confident, or that's not a good idea, or that you shouldn't be doing this, or you shouldn't be going over there, or why would you want to take that job, and why would you do that move, and ooh, that sounds really interesting. And the closer that people are to you with those things is the more dangerous they are. So for me, one of the ways I keep myself confident is I stay away from those people. And wherever they are in my life, I just kind of cut them out. Because ultimately, one short life to do whatever it is you've been given to do if you believe in a life purpose. And the only thing those people are going to do is distract you from doing something great, because now you're having to dim your light, be small, be where they are. And the thing is, when I talk about insecure people, that's not the full potential of who they could be if they'd let themselves be it. But actually, for some of these people, actually what they get consumed in is the way that they feel insecure, and then they draw the rest of you into that. And so I try not to be around people like that.
Yeah. So let's talk then a bit about, you know, in terms of since you've come into golf and now how you, you know, what really drew me to you, for example, was your contributions in publications like Golf Monthly and the PGA Golf Business Quarterly magazine in particular. So did that come just as a, like, how did that all come about?
I wrote an article in The Observer, and that was January 2023, it came out. And after that, that's when everyone, you know, kind of, I think that opened the gateway, because golf is not used to talking outside of itself.
Right.
There's not, you don't see much stuff about golf anywhere other than in golf publications.
Funny that,
just talking
right?
to each other.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think for a lot of people, that was interesting that here's someone who's managed to get, is talking about golf in like The Observer, like a national magazine that is not golf orientated.
Right.
And as someone said it to me from the RNA, it was like a love letter to golf that I'd written. But yeah, that then, you know, you meet one person. When you meet Mike, you meet everyone. So then there's also that. But
right.
Yeah, that kind of started the ball rolling.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so now with what you do in that space, like what do you get out of that personally?
A lot of pressure. I'm trying to do less of it. Because I think for me, I kind of felt like I turned golf into a job, because that's me.
Right.
So in the end, it becomes like work. I'm like charting this progression. And actually, I think that was not good for, it was too much pressure. So if I put in the me that likes to be really good and excelling at things against this thing where I'm kind of charting this journey, and now this journey is not going the way that I wanted to, I'm like hitting like a bump in the road, I think sometimes it can become a bit debilitating.
Right.
Because you feel this need to be constantly progressing all the time. And then actually once you're in it, you know, it's a bit more topsy-turvy, a bit more like a roller coaster. So I'm doing a bit less of everything because I just want to concentrate on getting my game to where I want to get it to. And I think that's always been the struggle, because the pull is always to do more, say more, be someone who is different from what else is going on. So there's that thing of you should be speaking and you should be saying, and I feel that internally too. It's not even just, that's just not even coming from the people. I understand that. I was literally, I'm going to sell these clubs. I'm giving up, like I just can't do it anymore. And this lovely lady on LinkedIn wrote this really lovely post, this black woman, about how she'd taken up golf and she just thought it wasn't for her, and then she'd seen something that I'd written and that's why she took up golf and she's now a member of a club. And you see things like that, and that is a pull, because you think, gosh, you know, it just shows a difference a person can make. Because I was writing about my golf on LinkedIn.
Does that make it worthwhile? Does that continue to ignite the flame, or?
I think it just made me feel like, you know, sometimes for all of us, there's things that's just not just about you. And I think I get a lot of that from my parents, that, you know, your life is not just about you. Mm. It is about what can you contribute.
Yeah.
And so I think that is a pull. I think it's a blessing and a curse, because there's probably lots of things in life that I would have stopped doing a long time ago. But sometimes you don't always feel that you can just stop, because that's kind of the space that you're occupying. And to just leave it there, it feels like you shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah, you know, I love what you're talking about here, because here's my negative self-talk again. Like, I'm a nobody. I'm a relative nobody in this space at the moment. But I guess if there's anything I take away from what you've just said, it's that somehow, you know, continue. as long as I can, for example, continue to get enjoyment out of my game of golf amidst the process of creating content like this or writing journal articles, and if, as I hope it will at some point, it will gain attraction where people start paying attention to it and things, but you draw me into thinking about how, you know, since I've been doing this, Janelle, I look at all the golf influencers out there and I see all the content that they're creating. And I think to myself, like, aren't they actually allowing themselves time to enjoy what they're doing? Do you get what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, because it's not, like, there's a point where that's unenjoyable. Like,
yeah,
because
you're doing it for other people's...
And you can't stop. Yeah. So you can't stop creating the content because you've got followers and now you've got sponsors and now, you know, you have to keep the algorithm on your side and all of those things. I'm not saying that people don't enjoy it, but it becomes a job. And so I came to a point where I thought, okay, I'm not enjoying my golf much at the moment because I'm playing terribly. I don't like not being good at stuff. So that's not great. And then I've got to write this stuff and I've got to do this stuff. And it's just becoming too much for me. And actually all I really want to do is get my game back on track because that's why I'm here. And so the struggle in life is always how to keep the main thing the thing. But equally understanding that when that woman puts that thing on LinkedIn, I messaged her because she didn't message me or anything. I'd never interacted with this lady before. And it was just because she tagged me in this post. I think maybe we're connected. But and just to think, okay, wow, something I love has lit a spark in someone else to spark them with something that they love. And isn't that amazing? So will I write and do more things? Probably yes. But at the moment, I'm kind of like, you know what? I have to let this be something for me. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, and actually it's interesting because, like, you know, for me, I really didn't like, so I generally don't like social media in the most part. And so I knew coming into Golf Yourself Healthy that I did have to invest in it. It's the currency these days, right? And so Instagram is my main channel. But what I've come to realize just very recently is what Golf Yourself Healthy is. It's a podcast and it's a journal. And so I should be using that platform for that rather than it being, yeah, it's like, unless I choose to put image like reels of me playing golf on there, no one's expect right at this moment. And if I can keep that sacred, if you get what I'm saying.
So I don't really post myself golfing. Mm. There's few, but mainly it's me, my insights or my thoughts about golf culture and cutting my handicap. I don't want to play a par and show, but I must confess I'm not that interested in seeing it in others. So I don't think anyone's interested in watching me play a par four horribly and getting a double bogey. So for me, I think someone once said to me, what we like about your account is that you just talk about interesting things around golf. And actually, there's not a lot of that content. And I do wonder where golf content will evolve to. I feel at the moment it is very in its evolution because it's still new in terms of golf influencers. And that's probably like the last 5 years. And I do wonder how it will in the end evolve. But I hope it evolves into something that is not just golf, but that's actually thoughtful and meaningful. If you want to attract new people to the game.
Well, I agree, but I think what I partly observe is you'll see, what I hope is that, you know, you see certain influencers in golf starting out with that alternative perspective on it, talking about it in the way that you are, but then because the institution of golf thinks about it in this echo chamber way, it consumes it into that machine, and then people end up talking about it in a way which feels quite processed.
And navel-gazy.
Yeah.
And I think it depends on who you want to attract. Do you want to attract other golfers?
Yeah.
Or do you want to be bringing new people into the game? Because for me, those are two very different styles of content. But I'll be interested to see how that evolves and carries on as people progress.
So we're going to wrap this up pretty shortly because I know you've got to get out of here and people are looking at their wedding venue. I do not want to be gatecrashing that. But two things for you, Janelle. The eagle has landed. This is one of my favourite segments in this podcast. Okay. Now, this does not literally have to mean that you've scored an eagle or, like, you know, it can be if you want to tell an eagle-related story. The whole idea is that famous saying, eagle has landed, it's kind of mission accomplished. Tell us a story where you've done something in golf or you've hit a certain shot where you kind of go, you've been working on that thing, or it's just like, yes, I'm proud of that and I remember that?
So there was one round last summer, probably around this time last year, and I was in a real purple patch. I got my new PXGs. My handicap fell by like 10 in 1 month. Like, I was on a roll. At the start of it starting to tumble, there was this round where I scored 2 birdies in 1 round. And my handicap was must have been like 39 at the time. So to even get a birdie is, and this was on a par 4 and a par 5. So it wasn't, you know, on a short thing. And so on one of them, it was par 5. It's par 4 for men, but it's still fairly lengthy. And I stuck it to about that really short putt.
For the listener, that is like less than a foot.
Yeah. It was less than a foot.
Winning.
And so that was like my third shot onto the green. And then just short putt. I mean, that was a, it was a, you know, it was a gimme. But it was, I putted it in, obviously. But it was just so quick. And then on that same hole, on the 18th, I did a not mega drive. It was like 180. It wasn't mega. But then my 6-iron, I just, again, I stuck it on the back of the green. So I was on for 2 and then drained like, oh God, really long putt. It was most of the green. Drained a long putt, went in for my 2nd birdie of the round. You know, when you're like, what is going on? And I think, I don't think I've ever been, the next time I was happy was when I shot like 10 under my handicap. And that's when I got a massive cut. And that's the day that my golf died. It was literally...
That was your golfing god.
That was like my golf. It was like I passed into the next life there and it's never come back ever since. But yeah, those are probably 2 days where I was like, oh my goodness. But I also think last year I was a bit more on it about what I wanted to achieve. I don't think I've been as on it this year, but last year... I knew I wanted to shoot 10 under my handicap. I was like, one day I want to go out and shoot 10 under my handicap.
Do you like a numerical, like a metric to shoot? Is that why? Or
I just...
Like something tangible that you can...
Do you know what? Now I'm thinking about it, I'm trying to think about what it was about last year. I just think... Maybe I had more headspace. Maybe I was just a bit more kind of gung-ho because my handicap was really high and I wanted to bring it down. Still high now, but I don't know, this time last year I was just locked in and I think I was just kind of riding a wave, and I think this year has just not felt like that, and I haven't felt like that. And that's the thing about life, when you say who are you, we're always becoming and unbecoming something. And I think last year I was just super focused and this year I have not been as focused. So that's part of why I'm going back to my old coach, why I'm going back to, because I think maybe I'm searching for something that's going to spark that kind of, because in my life, I found that is a thing that's got me anywhere. It's kind of that tunnel vision of, I just knew I want to shoot 10 under my handicap.
Yeah, I can understand what you're talking about here, because it's like, there's almost parallels with that whole like feeding the machine with the content thing, where it's just like the more success that you have, the more that you want. And you know, there's a friend of mine who just worked very hard in this game, got down to like a 5 or 6 handicap, and I could just observe how his enjoyment of like a par got marginalised.
Yeah,
it kind of was like,
I should be getting
in the hunt for
I should be getting that,
and I failed myself, you know.
And that's how and that's why you often hear that, yeah. Oh, Janelle, because I know, okay, well, I've duffed this shot, I'm out of this hole in terms of a score I want to have. So yeah, I think. It's the thing, the crazy thing about golf is obviously you still enjoy it on some level because you keep coming back for more. But on a different level, I think definitely the way I feel about golf this year is probably a bit more frustrated and a bit more not enjoying it as much as I was this time last year.
And so why is that though? Because you're comparing back to that yardstick of...
Yeah, because I'm just not playing as well. You know, last year I was hitting 200-yard, 230-yard drives. This year, I'll be lucky if my driver goes 150. I find that really distressing, because there's nothing else in my life that works in that way. My job doesn't work in that way. It doesn't work in the way of you had it and then you lost it. It just doesn't, you know, being able to present on TV doesn't go away. You can always do it. I can do it tomorrow. I could do it now. I could do it next afternoon. Whereas golf is just this really different beast that you can't control that. And then once it gets in your head, it's like a downward spiral. And I must say, I've never really experienced much like that.
Totally get it. But by the same token, like, you know, and here's the HR professional in me coming out here, like, you've got your goal setting at the start of the year and your PDP and your development plan and stuff like that. That's a side to golf that I love, because you can, you know, you've got a choice at the start of each season, which says, you know, you write up your development plan. Now it's up to me whether or not I let that thing gather dust and it's a concept that I talk about in passing, or if I just actually embrace that thing and really, you know, because
I mean, last year I was on it. I had my book, I had my distances, I was ticking them off as I was achieving them with my clubs. You know, your average, as it has for women's, it had, I think it had beginner, good, average, advanced, or something like that. And I was ticking them all off, and I was getting, because my performance average on my watch was telling me my performance averages, and I was like, right, I want to get to 200 on my driver, I want to get here, I want to get here. And I did tick off everything. But this year, I just have not had that level of focus. And maybe that's something for me to think about, because everywhere else in my life, I'm either deciding or I'm focused about what's going to happen next. So maybe I need to be a bit more on it in terms of, this is what I'm trying to achieve.
Well, you know, equally, Janelle, if, you know, what you've said about the confidence that you bring to your life because you remind yourself all the things that you're very good at, maybe just keep reminding yourself how good a chipper you are and let that wash over you and carry that into every
it's
other
true.
Aspect of
I
your
am,
game.
I am
you know?
Good at chipping.
You
I
are.
I am good at chipping.
You are.
But no, yeah, I think golf is just that thing that gets in your head like nothing else I've ever known.
That's why we love it too.
That's why we're addicted.
Let's finish on nostalgia, golf yourself nostalgic. So, you know, tell us a golf related story involving you that makes you feel warm and fuzzy. And actually, in turn, well, these are the stories I like a guest to tell, so that it tells almost the convinces the non-golfers out there as well, like, This is what this game can do for you.
I think I've had some great rounds with friends where you just kind of, the sun's shining, the sky is blue, the trees are green. There's often lots of nice wildlife in courses. And this one had a lot of water. There's swans, there's ducks, you know, and you're just kind of having a nice round where you're not too worried about the outcome, you're scoring all right, you're with friends, you're having good chat about life, having a drink sometimes, a little bottle of Prosecco. Someone's like, do you carry that for in case you get a birdie? I was like, no, it's in case my round's going really south. That's normally why I carry a drink. But I think it's just that moment where, again, you just leave the world behind.
Yeah.
And for 4 hours, you don't have to look at your phone, you don't have to think about any of the stresses. You're just out here playing great golf, having a great chat, in beautiful nature. And for me, I think those are always the best days that I've had, when I'm just out there to have a good time. I'm not too frustrated. And I can just relax and just, I don't know, feel at one with being outside. So I think those are probably, that's the nostalgic moments that I enjoy the most. And what I do also love is when there's club competition days. I think those days are often quite fun, when actually no one really minds who wins. We have the banter about who's winning, but actually no one cares. It's just everyone together.
Oh, there's a nucleus of people that do care.
Oh, yeah, there is a nucleus. Yeah. There is a nucleus of people who do care. And then when you come back and there's normally a
too
barbecue,
much. Yeah, too much. Yeah.
There's a barbecue, you know, everyone's kind of sitting around, there's music playing. It's kind of like a party.
Yeah.
I think that's the best of golf.
Yeah.
That is the best of golf, because ultimately what we're all seeking is community.
Absolutely. That's a beautiful, you know, that, yeah, I couldn't say any better than that. So, and that's what, as I said to you out in the course, that's increasingly now, I'm just getting drawn. I'm finding my people here. I love what you talked about in terms of, like, you know, just you can make an active choice around who you spend your time with. And that absolutely applies out in the golf course too, just to, so yeah. Anyway, we will leave it at that. And thank you again for agreeing to do this, for warmly receiving me here. And Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Do remember to follow us on your podcast platform of choice. If you'd like to get in touch with the show, with me directly, you can email me. Email address is listed in the show notes. Or if you listen on Spotify, for example, you can use the comments feature there to drop in a few words about what you liked about this episode, the show in general, and any feedback or ideas for future episodes. But until the next time, please always remember to embrace the rough and forever cherish the fairway.